don't lose sight of the bigger picture. Get structured and innovative financing solutions for business growth. Search NetBank Bigger Picture Business Banking.
While no one will dispute the effect the banning of booze has had on freeing up hospital beds in trauma units since late last year, we need to be brutally honest and accept it's also having an adverse effect on people's livelihoods. The alcohol industry, restaurants, bars, packaging firms, transporters have all felt the knock since President Cyril Ramaphosa announced the prohibition on alcohol at the end of last year. Many businesses are on the verge of folding or have already closed their doors as a direct result of the decision. Big corporates have taken tough decisions to come to the impact. More than 500 SAB staff received their last paycheck on Friday last week after the company suspended their employment due to the ban on the sale of alcohol. And if we look at SAB, it's also taking government to court. The SAB, owned by global brewer AB InBev, told Business Times yesterday that it had suspended the contracts of 550 temporary workers indefinitely and with immediate effect. That's to go on top of $2.5 billion in cancelled capex, fixed investments that is now lost to the economy for good. Andrikus van der Veste is in the DA's Western Cape spokesperson on agriculture, said in a statement that the consequences of the first two alcohol bans had been severe, with a 7.5 billion rand loss in revenue and 80 wineries and 350 producers shutting their doors. He said 18,000 jobs have been lost in the wine sector to date. And while we tried to get government to join this panel last week already, the Minister of Trade and Industry and Competition spokesperson said the minister was in a meeting this time. We asked for the minister to send a replacement, and there request has fallen on deaf ears, it seems. Well, to cover the measures recommended to governments, the economic impact of the ban, the rise of the illicit trade, as well as the impact on the up and downstream sector, it's a great pleasure to welcome our guest today, Sibani Mgadi, chairperson of the SA Liquor Brand Owners Association, Lucky Ntamani, the convener of the National Liquor Traders Council, and Wendy Albert, CEO of the Restaurant Association of South Africa, who is on her way to the union buildings to stage a sit-in. Sibani, who is SALBA firstly? Whose interests do you represent? And what have the effects of the alcohol bans over the various lockdown periods had on your members?
Well, South African Liquor Brand Owners Association, we are a combination of mainly the spirit companies as well as the wine companies operating in South Africa. So we deliver a number of brands both in the spirit and wine and cider portfolio. It's been quite difficult for us as the sector. We are updating our numbers now, but based on the last count of the last ban, clearly our volumes were down anything between 21% for wine and around about 23% for spirits. And if you look at it from a revenue contribution to government of those portfolios, that revenue contribution was down 28% from about 45 billion down to about 35 or so billion. So it is a significant impact. Each company, of course, is feeling the heat. As you correctly said, some companies have started retrenching and cutting jobs. For now, many of our members have opted to reduce costs, like removing all the employee incentives and just maintaining others. I have implemented salary cuts for a certain period. So we are trying our best to balance the books. What we are waiting for currently is that decision from National Treasury, whether they can grant us deferment for the taxes that we are currently liable for, until at least there is time for us to trade and raise money to be able to honor our obligations.
We'll come back to that request for tax deferments. There was a request made for tax deferments last year as well. Wendy, just to bring you in, as you announcing the sit-in at the union buildings that starts today, what exactly are you sitting in at the union buildings for? What are you asking the president to do?
You know, Michael, at this stage, I think if you just look around, you'll see how decimated the restaurant industry is. It's critical times. We are seeing hundreds and thousands of people losing their jobs and hundreds of restaurants close their doors. Without proper consultation and being able to engage with government, and for us to use our voice as a restaurant industry, we need to be able to look at solutions that can save the industry. What we're finding at this point in time is that there are many other industries and many other organizations speaking on behalf of us, and we can't have the Ofcon organisation speaking for what they believe is needed within the Oncon space. We're a completely different business. We employ a vastly many more people than what they do, and also we can safely execute the protocols and ensuring people can have a safe experience in restaurants. You know, for a start, they don't have to queue outside restaurants to be able to be served. We've got all the necessary protocols, and we need to look at mechanisms and speak to President Ramaphosa about his promise to balancing lives and livelihoods as well as saving the economy. And at this point in time, we don't have urgent conversations and we don't get the ban lifted immediately as well as a curfew, I'm afraid to say we won't see a restaurant industry in the couple of days that will be forthcoming.
And one of the many eateries around Johannesburg that has announced it might not be able to begin trading if the ban is not lifted beyond the end of January is the local grill, which is something of an institution. It just shows you how broad-based and how deep this is cutting. Lucky, from your perspective, representing taverners across the country, what impact has this latest alcohol ban had on your members?
Hi, Michael. Thank you for the opportunity. So, I think for us, this latest ban is almost a last nail on the coffin. We are worried about the future survival of the tavern sector, as it were. And, you know, we feel that, you know, this was an unfortunate ban because the liquor traders had committed themselves and actually put in practice measures that ensured that there was total compliance on the ground that supported government's efforts in fighting against the COVID-19 pandemic. But we feel that, you know, the current ban is not something that we'll be able to get out of. And if you look at the workers that we have, 250,000 that are linked to our 34,500 taverns, you know, it means currently, as I'm talking to you, none of those are at work. And the chances of them being recalled back into their working environments are very slim, given that these are informal workers that are aligned or attached to our taverns.
Sabani, I'm going to move on to you now. And from Selva's perspective, one of the big gripes that we heard from some very well-known winemakers last Monday on the show was the fact that communication with government has been through the same meetings that the president has with the rest of the country to announce these bans. But apart from that, there is very little communication with industry. From Selva's perspective, what kind of communication have you had with the various members of the National Coronavirus Command Council, with the president, with the DTIC, around when the ban is going to end, to provide any kind of clarity to your members?
Well, Michael, certainly I must say, having worked in this industry for more than 8 years, it's been a very, very frustrating period. There is no clear line of accountability for what is happening in the sector other than the final decision that gets announced. And you reach out to, say, the line function department, which would be your Department of Trade and Industry, which is basically the department that licenses us. You don't get clarity in terms of, firstly, the basis of the current ban and what will it take for the current ban to begin to be reviewed and what will be the milestone, whether in terms of infections or number of people admitted in hospitals. There is no clear accountability in terms of what will be that tipping point where then there will be consideration of opening of sites. As you currently pointed out, we were told that by at least up to the 15th of January, there would be a more objective review. That review was not really consulted. There were other sectors that were consulted, but certainly not the alcohol sector. So you have that difficulty. Of course, there are departments that we have at least worked relatively okay with them. Treasury has been much more upfront in terms of its perspective on what is happening in the sector. They have in the past considered in two occasions the payment of excise tax on us, and we have honored our obligations after the lifting, and we are hoping that we can get a response in that front. Of course, you will have a general area around social services, the health impact of what is perceived to be contribution of the alcohol in cases of trauma. Our argument in that front is that every time you have had a ban in South Africa, that has run parallel with the most extended form of the curfew. So you have firm restrictions running parallel to the ban, and as we lift the bans and also the restrictions on movement get lowered down. So I think to come to a conclusion that it's only alcohol that is contributing to the pressure on our emergency services, it's not something that we agree with. We have actually looked at various other countries, the US, UK, and a number of other countries that have implemented restrictions on movement, but never banned alcohol altogether like we did in South Africa. They've achieved more or less the same numbers, 60% decline in their emergency admission. And we think that consideration that we can trade safely while you keep other restrictions in place to make sure that we minimize any pressure on the health system.
It comes back to a point that many people have been making about transparency and also about evidence-based decision-making. At a time when we don't have the oversight of Parliament, we're operating in this state of disaster, and so even now more than ever, we need transparency. We need to be guided by the science and the evidence and not making regulations by decree. Wendy, from that perspective, restaurants have not only had to deal with the alcohol ban, but also the curfew. So if you're a restaurant trading, you can't sell one of your primary margin products in alcohol. You then have to close down your kitchen at 7:30 in order for your staff to get out just after 8 in order to get home by 9 o'clock. And that's even if you can trade because of load shedding. What impact is the curfew having on your members' ability to trade?
Michael, it's just been an absolute disaster from all angles. You know, one, you're right, we are dealing with the load shedding. The restriction on our operational ability has really been devastating. We've certainly outlined the connectivity to the decimation of turnover to the curfews. We are currently, if we're lucky, trading at around 20% of our budget. It is complicated. We can't get staff home. The cleaning is, you know, we put huge pressure to be able to keep our restaurants safe and to sanitize effectively. And then when we're put in a position where we've got pressure to be able to keep our restaurants clean and we've got to close down early. The second major impact is obviously as a consumer's ability to enjoy a meal within our establishment. You know, we're rushing them out at 7:30. It is not in sync with their meal time. And also they're paying for an experience which is shortcut. And it puts a lot of pressure, obviously, on the staff members. They're stressing to get home. They're scared of the police. The restauranteurs are scared of the police. We've got to get closed. We've got to get the restaurant cleaned up. And it's very difficult to be able to get a meal out in that time. So we've also had a lot of consumer pushback saying that they're not enjoying eating in our restaurants at the moment because they feel so rushed. So it certainly has contributed to the decimation of the industry. You know, it would have been one thing I would anticipate. One, it was the alcohol ban was given its own restrictions, but with the curfew and the alcohol ban, you know, there was an necessity to do both to the industry. And again, that highlights exactly what we've been saying to all this time. If the decision makers were talking to us as an industry, we could have really outlined how many jobs would have been impacted through this because we've been through this lockdown before. And, you know, we're not the COVID experts. We are here to support government. We are here to support the initiatives they take to balancing lives versus livelihoods. But they also have a responsibility to work with us and looking at mechanisms to save the restaurants.
Lucky, what have you seen from your vantage point in terms of the illicit trade of alcohol and the rise in the black market trade? I know friends and colleagues who've been offered all sorts of concoctions and potions during this particular prohibition, none of which I would certainly be touching. What are we seeing through your members?
It's a very serious problem. Just yesterday I was in Boxback, where the illegal traders are actually taunting the legal traders to say, we are the ones that are ruling the roost now. You guys cannot open, you cannot sell because the law doesn't allow you to. But we are able to because we do not have to oblige with any regulations. And these guys are working closely with police, strangely, you know, to pursue their illegal operations. And we saw this in KZN as well, you know, in the last week, where the police are actually even placing orders from these legal traders so that they can have stock and be able to sell. We find this appalling, you know, especially as these law enforcement officials are meant to protect us and to safeguard against the COVID-19 regulations. But also the worrying trend that we're seeing is the illegal conclusions that are being mixed. I was in a fortunate situation where I met two women who came to a particular tavern in KZN to ask for money to go and release their kids who had died and they were in a mortuary because they had consumed this illicit alcohol. It is very saddening because when I pressed on, I realized that in a particular area in Nanda, 7 people had died in just 1 weekend out of this illegal concoction. We are saying to government, it's not necessary you know, to push the law-abiding citizens to consider alternatives. Whereas there is a legal trade, there is a legal market that can best supply, you know, people that want to self-medicate in a responsible manner with alcohol. So this continues to be a problem for us, the illicit trading of alcohol, as well as the illegal alcohol that is being made, you know, at home, you know, without using any quality mechanism to ensure that there is safety. You know, so it's something that, you know, we continue to worry about. Hence, our call to government is to allow for the full trading of alcohol to take hold over a seven-day period. It's about time that, you know, we get back on. You know, it cannot be that we have to beg to be able to operate. We understand, you know, the issue of saving lives, but we feel that the government is almost using us as a scapegoat, you know, towards their inaction. The president was a deputy president and head of government business for over 5 years. What has he done to ensure that the health sector is best prepared to deal with any eventuality of a particular pandemic like we're experiencing now? And now he's the president and he hasn't done anything. You know, we feel that it's about time that he takes full responsibility and allow the sale of alcohol to take hold as a matter of urgency. And in fact, we just wrote a letter to him about an hour ago where we're asking him to open liquor as a matter of urgency. The 1st of February is a deadline that we're giving him. We cannot dilly-dally around this issue. A lot of livelihoods are at stake, you know, because of his inaction. He needs to come to the party and support the livelihoods, most especially of the small black-owned businesses in the township space.
And Lucky, if that 1st of February deadline is not met, what is your ultimatum to the president? We see SAB have already taken government to court. Are you also planning your own legal action?
We will not take the government to court, but we'll have action that will have far greater consequences than a court case. We'll keep those under arrest for now.
Sabani, I know that Selva has also decided not to take government to court or didn't join the SAB application. Are you reserving that as an option? Should we see the ban continuing? What is your position on that?
So we certainly have...
Well, we share fully the concern that has been raised by SAB. We do reserve our right to take action at some point, but we do feel that I think there needs to be some reasoning beginning to arise within government. Clearly, as you see, the cases are declining every day now. We are down from about 20,000 cases, new cases per day. We are down at around about 8,000 yesterday. And that should begin to reflect, at least in terms of admissions and any pressure that government would have been concerned about. We are grateful that there are provinces that are beginning to look at this differently. I think Western Cape being one of them, where there is a clear call for the lifting of these bans, and we hope other provinces that have really are dependent on the tourism and various other activities to stimulate their economies can reconsider this matter. We do feel that if there is proper engagement and at least some level of feedback from government, we should be able to begin to trade. And certainly, as manufacturers, we are concerned about the point that you have just raised on illicit trade. That area is really eroding the equity of our brands. We have a member that had an armed robbery at the production plant 2 days after the president announced the ban. And the only thing that was taken there were closures or caps of intended for production purposes. And we understand that to be linked to the refilling of branded products with illegal concoction and refilling and selling that in the general public as a genuine product. And that's undermining the very brand that we have put so much effort in building in the country.
Just to follow up on that point, Sabani, I was chatting to Charles Perry last week, and he says we do need a far more nuanced intervention in the medium to long term. And one of the things that he's proposing is things like QR codes to help facilitate tracking and tracing of liquor and to help dealing with selling home brews and counterfeit alcohols. It seemed to work in Russia. Would you go along with that as industry?
Yeah, at this stage we are dealing with pure lawlessness. I think the commissioner of SARS has expressed his concern around how sophisticated these syndicates are now. We are dealing with really gangs that are moving stock across the border without declaring them at the port of entry. We are dealing with circulation, much more sophisticated supply chain that is especially with KZN arising from there into Gauteng. And these are things that we need to deal with from a law enforcement perspective, and we hope we can work with Treasury, with SARS and SAPS on that front as we begin to open. The tracing of products, I think at this point, you will be able to trace the formal side of the business. Currently, we know what we have sold to which retailer, and if there's a need for product record, we are able to do all of those things. We do not think that that track and trace element will help us at this point. I think what is important is to begin to make it less viable for the illegal traders to operate. As they currently operate, they are operating at probably 100% markup of the product they are selling. Immediately as we open, they cut it down to undercut the actual brand itself and sell at discounted cost because they are not paying cost of goods as well as excise tax contribution. And that's the area where we need to really work with the police from an enforcement perspective to make sure that we shut down all of those operations. It has happened with the tobacco sector. We have seen brands that are unknown emerging and taking market share from well-established brands, and we wouldn't like to see that happening within the alcohol sector as well.
And then, Lucky, as we conclude, we've got about 4 minutes to go. What can you, as a representative body of a large chunk of the industry, from a retail perspective and on-site consumption perspective, propose, put on the table as a constructive way to deal with the scourge of excessive drinking? And what government is primarily worried about is people filling up trauma beds across the country. What are you as an industry proposing to help curtail that?
So we are working very closely with the independent liquor traders. So that will be Ultra Liquors, your big daddies, and those represent, you know, the biggest independent groupings in the country, retailing liquor. So our proposal is really to get the trade open over a 7-day period. But we understand that, you know, we've got the restaurant pushing as liquor traders as well that will not want, you know, to be almost inconvenienced by a proposal to only sell off-premise. So we are saying that, you know, as much as we are pushing for off-premise as a basis for opening liquor, we are also saying that we need to consider the issue of on-premise, whereby we look at ways in which, you know, those places of trade that will sell alcohol on an on-premise basis are able to do so in a responsible manner, but also continue to support government's efforts in fighting against the pandemic by ensuring that there is social distancing, that the people that are entering the places have got masks, and also that they are sanitized. But we understand that, you know, previously what let us down was this establishment that continued to play music. You know, when people are having a jolly time, you know, it's almost that they almost social distance themselves from wearing masks. So we need to look at ways in which we can have a responsible on consumption taking place, but also that supports all the government's efforts to fighting against the pandemic. But those are the things that we like to discuss, you know, with the relevant ministers, if they can just stop ducking and diving and sit with us so that we can find solutions and find a common ground that is going to work for both of us to saving lives and also protecting the livelihoods that we're so eagerly wanting to do.
Because for those retailers to continue to operate, it has to be so much more than just off-site consumption. You have to be able to serve your biggest customers, and those are the taverns across the country as well. From Selba's perspective, Sabani, what are you proposing as a creative solution to some of the issues that that government is clearly so concerned about with regards to alcohol putting a strain on our healthcare system?
Yeah, we view this as a more of a behavioral issue, which we do need to deal with it firstly from educational and awareness space. And of course, there is always an opportunity for some level of enforcement. From what we have analyzed is probably there are three areas where we need to make firm interventions, both from targeted interventions as well as enforcement. One is drinking and driving, where we have committed to help the government in terms of enforcement of that. Currently, we have a situation where even if you are stopped for drinking and driving, probability of getting conviction at the end of that process is very low, and we have committed to make evidence centers available to the traffic enforcement departments to be able to get evidence on site and process that and be able to have potentially have a successful prosecution. But complementing that is to then build incentives around the reason why people shouldn't be drinking and driving in the first place. We are before the ban, we were offering options of hail taxi service, issuing vouchers to consumers to be able to get associated with making a decision before you go out to drink, to make a decision around how are you going to get back home. And then the second area that we're concerned about is the binge drinking that happens mainly between Friday and Saturday, and we will be working, of course, with the traders on that front to look at what we can do to make sure that we minimize that high level of consumption and people consume alcohol responsibly. And then the last part, which concerns us very much, is underage drinking, which remains a problem. We need to then work with traders again to make sure that there is compliance with making sure that people below the age of 18 do not have access to alcohol, and we're putting in an incentive program for traders to at least commit to that level of ethical conduct, not to sell to anyone below the age of 18.
For now, though, it does remain a case of leadership. And the leadership that is making these decisions right now inside the National Coronavirus Command Council and in the DGIC is conspicuous by its absence, or its silence, I should say. Sibani Mgadi, chairperson of the SA Liquor Brand Owners Association, and Lucky Ntumani, convener of the National Liquor Traders Council, thank you very much. We had Wendy Alberts too, CEO of the Restaurants Association of South Africa, who is staging a sit-in at the union buildings representing the restaurants who have really struggled through this particular crisis. For now, though, the industry remains none the wiser as to when it will be allowed to trade again.
Don't lose sight of the bigger picture. Experience growth through cross-border trade. Search NetBank Bigger Picture Business Banking.